can be argued that technology has been playing catch-up in the wealth management sector for quite some time. But are we finally reaching a point where technology meets the needs of clients, or is there still a way to go? I discuss this and much more with Andrew Back of Multrees. My name's Katie Royals, and you're listening to Wealth Whispers, a PAM Insight podcast.
Wealth Whispers, the only podcast designed exclusively for leading wealth management and private client professionals, brought to you by PAM Insight. Join us for the daily news that matters to you, the latest sector developments, and incisive analysis of this fast-evolving industry.
So today I'm joined by Andrew Back, who is the Chief Commercial Officer at Multrees. Thanks very much for joining us, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Katie. Very nice to be here.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you on. And I think we can probably both agree the wealth management sector has been on a little bit of a journey recently with its technology. So I was thinking perhaps you could start by giving us a little bit of background of how it's got to where it is today, please.
Yes, of course, Katie, I'd be delighted to. And I guess where we perhaps need to start is just where the two ends of the wealth management industry come from, really. And, you know, for any listeners out there that are over the ages of 45, that they'll probably remember that there were two regulatory bodies going back some years now, the IMRO, which is the Investment Managers Regulatory Authority, and then the PIA, which is the Personal Investment Authority. And the wealth management industry, as it's now known, was probably split along those two lines. The IMRO area was the sort of stockbrokers and investment managers, and then the PIA area was the more financial advice firms, and so we had these two branches to the industry. And then we got to 2001 and the FSA was formed, the Financial Services Authority, and that brought the two strands together and was probably the start of the convergence. And then, of course, the FSA evolved into the FCA in 2013, you know, coinciding with the Retail Distribution Review as well. But I think what that means today is that we still have a bit of that legacy, that we still have the two ends of the wealth management channel or the wealth management market. And that's probably meant that the approach to technology has been split along those lines traditionally, as I'll sort of come on to. But I think the other thing to say as well is that convergence, we believe, and I believe, is happening at quite a pace now. So to put a bit more flesh onto that, the investment management and stockbroking end of the market, and sometimes known as the private client market, that has tended to be investment management focused. But what we're observing quite rapidly is that many of those firms in that private client investment management part of the market are starting to adopt and add on wealth planning, financial planning, as others call it. So they're traditionally investment managers, and they're now saying, actually, we need that wealth planning capability, that ability to do cash flow modeling and pension work, both accumulation, but more importantly, taking benefits out, sometimes known as decumulation. But I'm told that's not actually a word. So it's what most of the industry know it as. So we've got the investment management side adding wealth planning and financial planning. And then we've got the advisory side, which was the traditional PIA end. They are the advisory firms, but they're now adding investment management quite rapidly. So many of those firms are getting discretionary investment management permissions themselves, for example. They're employing CIOs, chief investment officers, and they're investing in that investment technology. So we're seeing this two ends of the market and where it came from starting to sort of, if you think of a Venn diagram, the circles of the Venn diagram are starting to overlap a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. And I think what I find really curious about that is, as that convergence happens, what does that mean for the technology offerings? Because traditionally, as you say, those two ends of the market were quite separate and would need very different solutions. But if firms are offering both now, where does that leave their tech?
Yes. Yeah, no, it's good question. I think, again, it's perhaps important just to briefly step back and see where we've come from. And what happened really? So for a long time, the institutional asset management market was the preserve of the operational outsourcing model. So the big global players would outsource part of their functions, typically known as middle office and back office functions. These big global asset managers would outsource them to specialist companies. Now, what then happened probably about 15 years ago is that started to evolve. That model started to evolve. So the operational outsource specialists started to deploy that functionality really into the private client investment management market. So where, if we go back to our two ends of the wealth management spectrum again, that private client end has historically gone, okay, we've got our wealth management business here, and we've got a set of operational issues that we need to solve. Do we solve those internally and recruit staff and build our own technology, or do we outsource that to an operational specialist? And many firms have chosen to do that on the private client side. Whereas on the advice side, what's tended to happen is that financial advisors have tended historically to have multiple relationships. So originally it was product providers and insurance companies, and then evolved into retail investment platforms. But they would have a range of investments, tax wrappers, as I say, platform relationships. And so you've got this very different model where you've got multiple what are now platforms, although they weren't always platforms on the advice side, and you've got the operational outsourcing historically on the investment management side. Well, again, and again, I hope this is making sense, Katie.
Yeah, very clear.
And again, what we're seeing is an evolution there. So what's happening is that the advice market is starting to realize, particularly with the increase in consolidators in that part of the market. So again, financial advice businesses historically, I mean, there's 5,000 odd firms, if you exclude appointed representatives, 5,000 odd firms in the UK, and there's all manner of activity going on with anywhere between 30 and 50 pretty significant consolidators, typically private equity backed. They are now buying up many of these IFA firms. And what those consolidators are realizing is actually they can borrow a lot of the processes and business models from that operational outsourcing playbook, from that private client side. The result of which is that the consolidator is saying, actually, we can start to offer our own platform technology here. So whereas historically for the retail platforms, and that's my background, I was part of a platform called Celestia and part of a business called Novia. So my background is very much retail platforms. And what they tend to be is very, very scalable businesses. They're built for scale, lots of different advice businesses serving many, many different clients underneath. But the trade-off for that scale is that they tend to be quite one size fits all. It's an offering that can't really be customized that much. And what the consolidators are saying is actually we feel we can offer something that's a little bit more customized and personalized to our clients around our requirements. So we want to effectively build our own. So what the consolidators are seeing is that they're able to build platforms around their specifications a lot more. Now, for some firms, that will be actually taking on platform permissions and hiring client service teams and adopting their own technology, and that is certainly one route, and we're seeing that happen. For another group of those types of firms, they're looking more at a white labeling solution where they're taking something that's you know, effectively outsourced operational outsourcing model that we talked about on the private client side. They're just taking that model and building their brand over the top of it, which is a sort of lighter version of adopting one's platform.
And almost that this sort of mass sort of platform business can be a little bit personalized and made perhaps a little bit more bespoke for the kind of people who've been used to private client experience.
Yes, I mean, interesting. The word bespoke is an interesting one. We find that a bit of a hot potato. And the reason we find it a hot potato is that I think where the word bespoke is used, people can sometimes assume that that's a completely bespoke platform built from scratch. And of course, that is not possible to scale like that, because if you had a bespoke platform for each client, you'd run out of road. It's just not scalable. So what one has is a core operating system in the middle that's consistent across all the clients that use it, clients as in client firms, and then it's the client facing bits around the edge that are able to be configurable would be the word we would use. So for example, client reporting. So if I think about how retail platforms would typically deal with client reporting, they would have a very scalable solution, but it will be one size fits all. This is the report you can offer your clients, Mr. Wealth Management firm. With the model we're talking about here, the operational outsourcing model, it's more a case of saying, right, what are your reporting requirements, Wealth Management firm? We will work with you to build that report out. So it's the core system is the same across clients, but it's the sort of peripheral client facing bits that are the configurable bits.
Yeah, and I guess those sort of cosmetic changes are actually so important for firms, because in an industry where USP is relatively hard to establish, the branding is really important, and making it look like your own must mean a lot to the wealth firms.
Yes, yes, completely agree. And I think there's been a couple of interesting examples recently in the reporting development. So, we have one client who are ESG specialists, and what they wanted to do was build a very different report that had a look through to show the ESG impact of the investment. So as well as all the traditional metrics and performance reporting, they wanted to be able to say, this is how your portfolio impacts on the ESG space versus a benchmark portfolio. And because we're focused on this area, you know, your ESG impact, your carbon footprint of these investments, et cetera, is a lot lower. And the feedback we've had from them is that they find that really engaging with their end investor clients. So yeah, that would be an example of configuring client reporting.
Yeah, no, and I think it's so important in the world of sort of ESG and sustainability becoming ever more important that the technology solutions adapt to meet those demands.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, as with so many things in this day and age, it's about data. You know, as the famous quote, you know, data is the 21st century's raw material, and it's no different here, that in order to produce that sort of configurable report, one has to have the right data feeds coming in to supply that data. So yeah, data is absolutely crucial to this.
And I suppose with all of these changes and developments, there's an awful lot of opportunities both for technology providers, but also the firms that adopt these technological solutions and are almost seen as early adopters, which seems a bit mad to say, given most firms have been talking about technology for a long time, but the sort of level of sophistication coming in now, you could still be an early adopter in many ways.
Yes, I think it's a really interesting time in our industry. You know, fantastically interesting. I mean, all the demographics are pointing to the need for advice ever more. You know, tax and regulation are getting more complex. I read the other day that the UK tax code is the longest in the world and has tripled since Gordon Brown came into power as Chancellor. So we have this incredibly complex tax system, allied to the fact that regulation is getting more complex, and we've got the consumer duty, of course, coming in. So firms are going to need to really evidence their client outcomes. You know, many wealth management firms were already client focused, but they're going to have to put processes in place to evidence that. And technology can absolutely help, be it around client reporting or anything else. But I think interesting is as well as technology, that we're big believers that you know, it's not just technology on its own that's important. It's technology and human beings as well. It's a combination of the two. Technology and service is something that we always strive for. And I think it's the same for wealth management firms as well. You know, I was talking to a good friend of mine only the weekend who is quite senior in the insurance industry, and he's reaching a point where he's looking at retiring and has fairly significant assets. And what he's saying is he wants proactivity from his wealth manager. Yeah, he wants the technology to be able to look at things when he needs to on his app, but he also wants the proactivity in terms of steering him on new pension legislation, etc. So a real need for a combination of both technology and human-led service.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting you touch on that, because for quite a long time, I think perhaps the industry has been a bit scared that, you know, technology is going to replace humans, it's going to do people out of jobs. But in fact, the reality is quite the opposite. It's about freeing up time to deliver more of that high touch personalized service.
Absolutely, completely agree with that. And I don't think I've ever met a wealth manager in my entire career that hasn't felt that personal contact is so crucial, and I don't think we'll ever be replaced, because, you know, these are people's lives that we're talking about in terms of wealth management. You know, I regularly hear wealth managers saying how, you know, clients will open up about all range of things in their lives. It's almost like a counselling session sometimes with the right dynamics, and that's all about trust, isn't it? That's trust and confidence, and technology enables and facilitates that, but at the end of the day, that human connection is the key ingredient, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think firms that sort of try and do away with that human connection will suffer in the long run, you'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly what we've seen recently is a number of big global institutions deciding that their sort of more technology-based advice isn't quite working for them. So, you know, I I think there are solutions. There are a number of solutions out there that deal with some of the kind of advice gap issues we've got in the industry. But, you know, technology isn't the silver bullet to solve everything. It's, as I say, I think it's a combination of the technology, but having that technology to facilitate the human interaction and human conversations.
Also, given sort of the increased speed at which technology has been adopted, and as you say, all the regulation and areas in which it can help with, are there any pitfalls or problems firms might encounter if they sort of feel a rush or a pressure to jump into technology quicker than perhaps they planned?
Yeah, I think there will be pitfalls that one needs to be wary of. It could be anything from technology suppliers being kind of overwhelmed with client demand and not being able to meet requirements in certain timescales. I'm aware of one or two situations like that are the case in the industry.
There's some extra client servicing responsibility and they can be pitfalls if one is not careful. But I think a lot of firms that are doing it have got some really good quality people in them. I think most firms are not going into that lightly.
Yeah, no, of course. And so I guess more positively then, what are the opportunities for these firms?
The opportunities for the firms that embrace and adopt technology?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I think efficiency is I think the big win here. So, you know, particularly on the private client side, still now today, we meet with wealth management firms that are struggling under the burden of partnering with global banks where you've got this, you know, very inefficient account opening process, for example. It's very paper-driven, very manual-driven, can take months just to open a client's account. And, of course, that reflects on the wealth manager, doesn't it? If you're a new client engaging with the wealth manager and it's taking months just to get an account open, that's not a great first experience. Whereas using technology, we can. It's absolutely possible to you know, load a new client onto a system, our system it could be, fund that account the same day, and then trade it all within that same day period. You know, everything is, all the dials have got to be pointed in the right direction for that, but it's technically possible. Versus this kind of situation still today, where you know, bank-led custodians tend to be very paper-driven, as I've said. So I think there's opportunity to improve efficiency. I think the second area where there's an opportunity is to differentiate in client service terms. And a phrase that I'm seeing quite a lot of late is this omni-channel way of delivering service. So historically, it might have been a case of, right, we either deal with this client face-to-face or we deal with them remotely, perhaps over the telephone or Teams or even online. Whereas I think now, particularly post-pandemic, clients are looking for a multitude of those channels. So sometimes it might be that they want to meet face-to-face. It might be the key annual review of the year where they want to have a really detailed conversation. And absolutely that makes sense as a face-to-face meeting. Other times, the end client might be time poor and they might want the meeting over Teams or they might want to engage with technology to have their question answers. It could be a chat bot even. So I think, yeah, differentiating the service through things like omni-channel service delivery is another opportunity.
Yeah, no, of course, I think those are both strong opportunities. And I think your point about efficiency there is so crucial because although perhaps not direct competitors of the wealth management industry, you look at sort of these online platforms where you can sign up, put money into account and buy stocks and shares in all within less than an hour. That's the kind of service clients are going to begin expecting. If that's how they've started out their investing journey, they're going to expect that to continue with their wealth managers, you would presume.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's right. That sets the benchmark, doesn't it? That gives something to aim for. I guess we do need to be mindful that some end clients have very complex financial affairs, particularly as wealth grows. You know, multi-asset, multi-currency, multi-jurisdiction, potentially multi-advised as well with several different custodians, could be, you know, politically exposed to clients. So, you know, one needs to be mindful that there is more complexity the higher up the sort of wealth pyramid one goes. But yeah, ultimately, the key thing is about technology to drive that efficiency.
Yeah, no, of course. And I guess the technology can help you identify those clients as well and the ones which may need enhanced checks and such
and then explain it to them as well, rather than just it taking months and them getting frustrated.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. No, and thank you. And so I guess just to finish, it might be quite useful for listeners who perhaps aren't as aware of Moultries or don't know, if you could just give, you know, a couple of sentences on what Moultries does and where you are at the moment.
Yes, of course, we'd be delighted to. So Moultries, Moultries is 12 years old as a business, and we look after, in terms of assets under administration, approximately $18.5 billion. And we started in the very much family office space, family office private client space, and that really was a place where it's about as complex as it gets. It's all those things we talked about, multi-asset, multi-currency, multi-jurisdiction. And we had to be very adept at integrating with various different third parties. So our DNA is in that family office private client space, and we've deliberately kept our client numbers low so that we're able to offer this high-touch service model combined with technology. So back to what we were talking about earlier on, we believe we've got very strong technology, but we absolutely want to combine that technology with concierge levels of service. So our service to our clients is really our kind of real core DNA and differentiator. Hopefully that gives an overview. I know you wanted just a brief overview.
I think that really helps, and I'm sure that would be very clear for listeners. And so just as a sort of final takeaway for listeners, if they were to take one thing from this podcast, what would it be?
I think the one thing is that combination, really. It's sort of been a theme that's running all the way through, that it's not just technology, it's technology and people. And for me, that's our message. It's a combination of the people-led service and the technology. We believe you need both.
A big thank you to Andrew for joining me on this podcast. So there you have it. Technology and people, it's a combination. Neither one can operate effectively without the other. What do you think? Is this the case in your business? Do let us know. But in the meantime, thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wealth Whispers, a PAM Insight podcast.